Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Hello.
Mr. Gadsby?
Speaking.
Yes, hi, this is Adrienne Berg. Thank you for being on our show.
My pleasure.
I'm going to just give you a little bit of a background on what we do. It'll be very easy, okay? First, you're going to hear music when we're actually on the show. You hear this voice giving us seconds, but don't worry, nobody else hears it, and it'll go off as soon as the show really begins. And we'll be live to tape.
Okay.
I'll introduce the show, I'll introduce you, and we'll talk. We'll talk maybe for about 10 minutes at the end. This music comes back in again, and I'll either have to cut you off, or you'll cut yourself off, or I'll already be talking, and I'll introduce the second part of what we'll talk about. And the show will stop, they'll put in commercials, and we'll do it all over again for the last segment. Is that okay?
Yeah, so total time will be...
Stuart, what are the two times for the two segments? 11 minutes for the first one and 9 minutes for the second one. But we don't wait for the commercials. We go right. So that's it. It'll be 11 plus maybe a minute in between for us, and then 9 minutes, okay?
Ready to go.
Now, I have a paper here with a lot of information about you. I understand about your wife. I understand the mission. Is there anything specifically that you want to make sure that I bring out?
That I'm involved with the American Brain Foundation. I think that's very important. Alzheimer's is something that is really decimating the African American community. And, and that brain health is not. There's not enough focus on overall brain health as opposed to individual organs in the body that have done a better job of, the organizations have done a better job of promoting their awareness and health.
And what's your personal background? I know your family background with regard to Alzheimer's, but your personal background?
When you say personal, you mean?
Well, your career background. Yeah, what you've done.
Yeah. Well, my background is television and... sales and production. I produced TV shows. I worked for King World. I was the senior vice president at King World. I was sales manager for two television stations. I was a TV rep. I produced a show that was the forerunner to American Idol called Big Break with Natalie Cole that launched the career of R. Kelly. I've worked with the folks at Grammys. I produced a show at the Kennedy Center, the Newsweek American Achievement Awards. So my background is television production, sales. You know, we had a radio show on Sirius, B. Smith and Thank You, Dan. So I'm intimately aware of media.
Great. So you'll be getting some questions on how to use that background to promote this cause, too, and if there's any intention to do it, and if people will watch. So you're gonna hear the questions like that from me. And also, before I forget, the book... Is that available on Amazon? Can people get that?
Yes, it's on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble.
Good. All right. My first question, just so you know, is going to be, what is brain health?
Okay.
So just be prepared for that one, and then we'll get into everything else, okay?
You got it.
Okay, Stuart, we're ready. Yes, we're ready. We're going to be quiet now.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, your host for Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And we look at every aspect of successful aging. But there is one topic that's certainly been in the news. I can't take credit for being the spearhead of this topic. I've written about it for many, many years before it became into the consciousness of the American public. But I will say that there have been a wonderful, wonderful breakthrough in understanding, awareness, and I hope one day a cure. And that is the word you know. That word is Alzheimer's. But it's more than that. It's more than one single disease with one single diagnosis. It's brain health in general. And also, what's going on? You know, we talk about things on this show that is rarely discussed. And we want to talk about the African-American community. We want to do that a lot more in issues of aging. But in this particular issue, there's some really solid reasons to take a look and see how folks in that community are being diagnosed, if they're being diagnosed, and if they're being treated. And what we can learn for everybody else when we do things right. So we have with us today a fellow who you're going to want to spend some time with. His name is Dan Gasby. He himself, and he'll tell you a little bit about his leadership in the field of media and all of his experience there. You might know B. Smith. If you haven't bought something from B. Smith, I don't know, you've been in a cave. But that is his wife, and there has been an Alzheimer's issue in his family. So he's very devoted to the question of brain health. And, of course, he's joined the prestigious organization, American Brain Foundation. We've had people on from the American Brain Foundation before. But they, again, have taken leadership in this field. So if this is something that touches your family, this is something that you have a curiosity about, something you know nothing about, stay with us. You're going to learn. So thank you, Mr. Gasby, for being with us. As I said, I want to jump in with one big question, brain health. It's your mission, but what exactly is brain health?
Well, you know, when I think of brain health, I think of a total 360 involvement with, you know, diet, exercise, attitude, making sure that one eats both healthy and holistically, organically as much as possible. You know, limiting the amount of alcohol, limiting the amount of fatty foods, processed foods. You know, what's good for the heart is good for the brain. And what has happened is, in reality, is that we don't think of, you know, the brain as an organ the way we may think of, you know, or being disease-addled the way we think of, you know, cancer or heart disease or diabetes. But at the end of the day, everything starts at and ends at the top, which is what separates us from all other animals, and that's our brains, which creates.
So, you know, one of the things, you've personally lived through issues of Alzheimer's with your own wife, and it's probably one of the things that motivated you. And you did write a memoir with her, Before I Forget, a beautiful memoir, absolutely available for everybody on Amazon. Do you believe, having lived through that and gotten the diagnosis, that a change in lifestyle, like you're talking about, would have made a difference for her? Or are there some things that are just that we can't control? I'd like to really know, because every single time I have an expert on this show, I'll tell you, Dan, they always tell me to eat right, exercise, and so on, and, of course, will prolong our life. But is
is there more
to it?
You know what, it really is, I mean, the good news is that she has and historically been a person that ate properly and exercised, and, you know, her diagnosis, which was pre, you know, 65, was basically one of a genetic situation that was going to happen, to be quite honest, but what we've tried to do and what her life up till that has been has allowed her to at least be in a healthier position overall than if she was overweight or if she had high blood pressure or if she, you know, was diabetic. You know, I mean, there is a question of, you know, you are a function of your genes, and this was something that was genetic that, you know, she didn't know about. But I think that just in terms of wellness and overall health, it makes a difference. And I think that leading scientists are now starting to conclude that for people who are getting the disease now and being able to look back, you may be able to stave off, because it has a lot to do with just being alive, and the longer you are, things do break down or things do pop up or surface. So I think there is a certain degree of the ability to, one, be in a gooder place as possible health-wise that will offset or minimize at the time. And then what science are working on right now, and I've got a tremendous faith in the scientific community, we're going to crack this. And I think we're going to crack this in the next, four or five, or, certainly in the next 10 years, but I think maybe even shorter than that.
Well, you point out that over 50 million Americans have some sort of brain disease, and that there really isn't enough focus on it. A lot of focus on heart, a lot of focus on breast cancer, and this is not to take away from our efforts there. But we know from that that it works. And when you focus on something, the research helps you cure, and that's where we're at right now. We're right at that tipping point.
I
want to turn my attention to the African-American community for a minute. And because I have a curious question. When I first read the press release about African-Americans are not diagnosed early enough or at all, I said, of course. And I put it right, honestly, I put it right to economic situation. But I don't know, because your family didn't have an economic situation. There are many African-Americans that don't. Is it just that, or is there more to it, that African-Americans aren't diagnosed and treated in the same way?
Well, I think it's a historic circumstance of anything having to do with our abilities to function cognitively in a what's considered a normal manner. There's been a historic stigma against, not going to a therapist or needing some sort of psychological help. But this is a physiological one. This is a one of a breakdown in the brain itself of proteins and plaque buildup. And so historically, African Americans have not wanted to show within the community or within the greater society any sort of weakness. The stigmas of that, being afraid to let people know that you do have a problem, sort of the stiff upper lip or keep it in the family. Uncle Willie, we don't talk about Uncle Willie because he's crazy. No, Uncle Willie has Alzheimer's or has dementia. This is not something that was psychological. This is something that was physiological. So, going all the way back to not wanting to get involved with research testing, feeling that, there's a double standard, that if someone is black and they're going, they may not come out the same way. It goes all the way back to the Tuskegee experiment, those kind of fears.
Right.
That there's a double standard. So all of those things in total has created this fear or a lack of wanting to be aware of what's going on, and lack of providing enough of the people in a setting, a research setting, so that you can see the differences, because physiologically, drugs work different on different demographic groups.
Right.
What may work on for a white female may not work for a black male, just by virtue of genetic composition. So all of that together has created this stigma and this fear, and we're just beginning to break that down and to talk about it. And that's why, my wife and I wrote the book Before I Forget, because the more we started to ask people about it, the more we, it's sort of like, we don't talk about that. And that's when I realized that's the biggest problem. We need to talk about that. We need to make sure that that's out there. And that's the only way we're going to get help, awareness. That's the only way we're going to raise funds. And so that became, our mission.
And, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about that mission, a little bit more about the memoir and your personal experience. And you just mentioned something that I'll tell you a little story before we cut off here. I've written a book a long time ago, 2008, called How Not to Go Broke at 102. And it was, what are we going to spend our money on as we get older, and how are we going to keep our money? And I looked into designer drugs, where you have drugs that are really designed for your genetics and also for your allergies, who you are. And I did say that there was no question that drugs for African Americans should be designed differently. And I wondered, is this going to look like a problem if I write about it? And I did write about it. Mm-hmm. And the reaction was, you know, bravo. You've got to know that there are different solutions for different people, not just in terms of whole groups, but individuals. So don't be afraid. That's what we're hearing here. Don't be afraid. Go and tell. Let it be known. Because if you keep your problems a secret, there's no one in the world who can tell. We'll be back. We'll talk about If I Forget and what Dave Gadsby went through. And perhaps with the right medicine, lifestyle, you won't have to. We'll be back.
For my age. Da-da-da-da.
Okay, so that was good. Now they're going to put in the commercials.
Okay.
I want to talk a little bit about the book when we come back. But is there anything, is there a website or anything that people could go to where they can learn more about brain health?
You could go to the American Brain Foundation's website. You can go to our Facebook page.
Good. You'll tell them.
Yeah.
You'll tell them all, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What's your Facebook page?
It's B. Smith and Dan Gadsby.
Great. Now, is it okay for me to ask you a little bit about your personal experience and what you went through?
Absolutely. I don't hold back.
Okay, good. Stuart, we're on again. We're ready for you.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello again, this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, and we have with us a gentleman who, as I said in the first part of our show, you're going to want to spend some time with. His name is Dan Gadsby. And we're going to talk about his media leadership in a moment, but he's joined forces with the American Brain Foundation, I should say,
yes,
to bring awareness, not just to Alzheimer's, I think we're aware, but to really bring a few dollars into the till so that we could do the research we need to do, and also to bring awareness to brain health in general, but also particularly to the African-American community who may not, as we're learning now, identify the problem in their own family, and if they do, want to admit the problem, and then, of course, they may not be properly diagnosed or quickly diagnosed to begin with. But the reason that he's so intent on making change is what's happened to him in his own life. If you go to Amazon, you're going to see a very important moving memoir called Before I Forget with his wife, B. Smith, and you know the wonderful B. Smith Company, everybody does. It's certainly one of those things when we say about Alzheimer's, it can happen to anyone and in any family. But Dan, when it happened in your family, how did it play out? Because we have a lot of caregivers who also listen to this show, and you're a caregiver.
Well, let me tell you something. It was the most devastating thing, short of death, that I've ever experienced in my family. There was a total disbelief. You know, the way Alzheimer's starts or the way you start to realize it, I mean, for us, we went and had a PET scan which showed the amyloid plaque in my wife's brain, and so it was conclusive that that was it. But the way a storm starts, you don't know a hurricane is coming unless you have the meteorological testing to show that it's happening and that it's going to come in waves, and that's the same way it hits you with Alzheimer's. You see little signs of difference, little things that I pointed out in our book Before I Forget, and it's out of the normal, and it makes you stop, and then things go back to what is you think is normal, and then they start to cascade, and they start to build up the way waves will build up as the storm is approaching, and then all of a sudden you get hit with the northwest quadrant. And,
right. You
know, all hell breaks loose, and then you finally come to the conclusion that this hurricane inside the person's brain that makes them act and do things started a long, long time ago, but you didn't know it because you didn't have conclusive proof that this is what it is. And so for the caregiver, you want the person to always act the way they had act prior to them having the disease, and you become very egocentric in terms of your own needs, and you start to try to force them to do what you think they should do and what's appropriate, and they can't because it doesn't work that way. And Alzheimer's is a very insidious and very selfish disease. The person has a war going inside their brain. Their rationale, their judgment, their understanding of things is totally askew. And so for the caregiver, it's, at a point it becomes surreal. And once you got it full, in a full-blown way, it's I call it hell without the heat. Understand everything that you took for granted, like a person getting up and going to the bathroom and washing their hands or brushing their teeth or putting their clothes on correctly or understanding what time of day it is or understanding who the President of the United States is or understanding that you can't do something because that doesn't necessarily make sense or could be dangerous, is thrown out the window. And so the caregiver has to totally adjust and live in their world and respond to them. And you lose a certain sense of freedom, a certain sense of independence, because you always have to watch out for what they're doing and how they're doing it, and if they even understand why they're doing it, because you know that it's never going to be the same. And so it was the most difficult thing for me as the caregiver, and that's part of the reason writing the book, Before I Forget, became so important to me from a catharsis standpoint, because I made a lot of mistakes. I wanted her to be the way she was when I first married her. You know, I'm married to this unbelievably successful, articulate, beautiful human being, and she can't do what she used to do, and she could do everything so effortlessly, and now everything is, you know, an effort to do very little. So I had to adjust myself, and I had to learn to recalibrate my own thinking about what is normal or how I'm going to get through each day.
Yeah, and you know, I think everybody knows B. Smith, but if you don't, this is the leader in entrepreneurship. The fact that she's a Black American woman also made her a special kind of leader. If you ever saw a picture, you know that Dan's right. She's a beauty, and I follow the careers of entrepreneurs and businesswomen all the time, and she's one of these careers. This is an icon. If you're not in the business world, maybe you don't know, but this is an icon and very unique. So was that an extra added pain because she herself at the beginning might have been found it impossible to believe that she can go from this level of functionality, I mean a super function person, to Alzheimer's? It would seem to me that there's no way that you could put a judgment what's worse, but this must have been throwing everybody, including employees and family members, because it's almost a matter of how could this happen? It seems like a mystery that this should be the case, and maybe it was harder for you to accept it.
My wife, I mean, besides being a world-class beauty, a model, she could sing, she could act. She was a person that could put clothes together in unbelievable ways. You know, we have products at Bed Bath & Beyond. She has tremendous style. And to start to see that unraveled, you know, three restaurants, we had TV shows, we had radio, magazines. So we've lived the American dream, and suddenly watch that dream go from a dream to a nightmare is a tough thing. And for me as a caregiver, when I started to ask around and talk to other people and got out of my own comfort zone, I hid it for a while because I didn't know what it was. I just thought maybe she's having a nervous breakdown. Maybe she's burnt out. Maybe she's taken on too much. Maybe it is psychological, you know? And then to look back and I realized, no, this is a disease. And the more I talk to people, and I'll be very candid with you, the more I talked to people who were white, I got one set of stories, and the more I talked to people who were black, I got another set of stories. One was, yes, it runs in my family, or we deal with it and we talk about it. And the other was, quite honestly, within the African-American community, a reluctance, a reticence to discuss it. And it just fascinated me. And then I realized that, you know, race in America has so much to do with so many things. And health is one of the big things.
It sure is. And again, I told you I want to spend time with him, and we don't have enough time. So here's how to do that. Go on Amazon and read Before I Forget. You'll never regret it. And let's take care of your brain. We'll be back after that in just a moment. Thank you so much.
I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
That was amazing. I hope that you got out everything that you wanted to say about this, because it was certainly fabulous listening.
Well, I enjoyed it. Excuse me. And if you could just mention the American Brain Foundation a little more, I would appreciate that.
I did. That's why I actually did the tease at the end there saying more about your brain health. So when I come back in the second half of the show, before I do my present the next guest, I'm going to be talking about that, give them the website. And we also have the website on our homepage starting on Wednesday.
Okay, great. You're a wonderful person. You're a bad lady, and that's a good thing.
That's good. Well, I'm going to take that as the compliment of the year for me. Thank you.
You got it. My pleasure.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Now, I can't hang up because I have to keep the line open for the next guest.
Okay, Monica, she'll be right with you.
Thank you.
Hello, Monica?
Yes. Hello,
hi.
Adrian.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. We're not on yet. We'll just take a minute. But I just wanted to say, I think you know that I saw the show.
Right.
And it was terrific. It was absolutely terrific. Of course, some of it resonated so much with me because of my age and because I'm Jewish and where I came from. And a lot of it was a different journey, a completely different journey. So I was fascinated by it. And it was very fun.
Oh,
it was very well received. Very well received.
Thank
a lot of standing ovations. But, I think that having seen it, I want to promote the show, and that's, I'll ask you a lot of questions about it. But I'll tell you what fascinated me, and I want to ask you about that, but on the air. You don't have to answer now. When you take a life like yours, you have to pick out certain things. How did you pick out what you thought would resonate on the stage? To me, that's the difficulty with a spoken memoir, and I would love to hear about your process on that. Is that okay?
Oh, that is a great question. Absolutely. I would be happy to talk about that.
And, of course, we'll set the stage, so to speak, about the play, your Rugrats, which was hilarious, the way you presented it, very humble but fun. Was that the real trophy? that you had on the stage?
Oh, yes. That's the real enemy.
You slept it with everything.
No, I had it shipped. I had it very carefully shipped. It's actually a funny story because we didn't even want FedEx to know that it was an Emmy. So my friend went to a gift shop in L.A. His friend owns it, and they wrapped it very carefully in a gift box, and then they brought the gift box to FedEx to mail it, so FedEx had no idea what was inside. So it was like a spy mission. But anyway,
I don't blame you. I was afraid that somebody would creep on the stage and take it because these people want that.
They lock it in a safe every night.
Well, in addition to these questions, because we have two segments together, is there anything specifically, of course, other than come see the show, that you would like me to bring out?
Well, I think the most important thing is that people are surprised when they get there. They think they're going to see a Jewish show. You know, they think it's just all going to be about being Jewish. And I think they're very surprised. I think the most important thing is to let them know that you don't have to be Jewish to love this show. You know, you just have to be human.
I absolutely agree. And although this is a very small point, and we may not have time to talk about it, believe it or not, who thought of the lobster? Now, Mittendrin and a lobster. Because I know why. Because it's not that Jewish.
Exactly.
But you have to really be in the Klan to understand.
I know. So many people after the show ask, where's the lobster in the show? They think it's going to be, you know, the story of a woman and her pet lobster.
I love it.
I actually had nothing to do with that. The advertising people came up with that, and the producer loved it, and I said, I don't know if anybody's going to get it other than real Jews.
Real Jews.
You know.
I know, because the first time I tasted non-kosher food, it was shrimp. So I was and it was, wait a minute, Chinese shrimp. So forget about it. I was completely hooked from then on.
Oh, me too. I love shrimp. I love pork. Let's face it.
But
I love shrimp.
They have to get the prize for the most subtle, intellectually subtle logo created. Anywhere.
I know.
Okay. So,
that's funny.
We're clearly ready, and I'm just going to tell the producer, so I'm going to ask him, what is the time for the first segment right now? 11 minutes. And then we'll stop. You're going to hear music. I'll either have to cut you off or I'll be on. I'm going to try to be on. And then
mm-hmm.
we'll take a minute together again, and then we'll have 9 minutes. So we have two very
okay.
nice segments. 8 minutes.
Great.
All right. Now
thank you for
quiet.
All that time. That's wonderful.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I could have you on for hours. look, I was able to watch you for 90 minutes without saying a word on my part, so you can imagine how much I love your work. Okay,
thank you.
So we are ready.
I think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Well, you can't say that we are not diverse around here. This is Adrienne Berg back, the host of Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. We just spent a very heartfelt half hour talking about very deep problem in our community and in the African-American community, and that is brain health. So don't forget, you're going to go to AmericanBrainFoundation.org and get the help that you need, AmericanBrainFoundation.org, and take a look at the B. Smith, Dan Gasby memoir, Before I Forget. But speaking of brains, See what I did there? How about one of the greatest comic brains that we have around, and that's Monica Piper. And you know her, even if you think you don't know her. If you've ever seen Roseanne or the Rugrats or Mad About You, you know the work of Monica Piper or her own stand-up routines. But here in the city of New York, where you can go to as many shows as you want in a day, people are lining up for her show, Not That Jewish. And what does it mean? Well, we're going to find out in a minute as we really welcome Monica Piper, who's probably one of the bravest performers I've seen in a long time. So, first of all, thank you so much for being with us. I loved the show Not That Jewish over at the World Stage in New York City. But I want to jump in right away. You do a lot of writing for TV. You're an Emmy winner. What brought you to reveal yourself this way on stage? It really is a brave thing to do.
Well, first of all, thank you for all these kind words. I cannot tell you, looking at myself in the mirror right now in my pajamas with my hair all over the place, I'm saying, oh, it's so nice to hear something nice about me. So thank you. What brought me to this? I started actually as a high school English teacher. I was and I loved it, but I had to leave because I couldn't handle the money and prestige. No, I'm kidding. But I became a stand-up, and I absolutely love doing stand-up. I think you have to love it if you are a stand-up. Otherwise, you'd be crazy to do it. And then I started writing for television. As you said, I wrote for Roseanne and Mad About You, and then many years as the head writer of Rugrats and a lot of other Nickelodeon shows. But, see, I needed to do that because I was raising a son. I was raising a child, and so I couldn't be on the road anymore. I needed a more stable, you know, something stable that kept me home so he could go to school. And that's when I started all the writing. And but he grew up, and I think once you're a stand-up, you really never leave your love of performing, and I really wanted to get back. But I felt that in the normal realm of stand-up, you're kind of expected to get a laugh every 10 seconds.
Yep.
And you
absolutely.
And you really can't get into some heavy stuff. People go to a comedy club to laugh, to get away, to escape, whatever. They don't want to hear about the death of your father or your mother's Alzheimer's or, you know, some of these deeper subjects. So I made the transition from stand-up to storytelling. And the Jewish Women's Theater in Los Angeles is absolutely fabulous. Now I know you hear the words Jewish Women's Theater and you immediately think of women in babushkas dancing the hora in a shtetl.
But really, I think like... you grabbed the mink from 1942. But
exactly. But it's not like that. It's cutting edge writers, actors, performing very modern pieces about the modern, kind of the modern Jewish woman, and the whole idea was to dispel any stereotypes. So I started writing original stories for them. And it's interesting because Rhonda Spinak, who's the artistic director, called me early on, I think it was 2008, and said, I want you to write original pieces for the Jewish Women's Theater. I said, Rhonda, I'm not that Jewish. And she said, well,
that's the line.
That is
that's
exactly
yeah.
how the title came to be. But I started writing all these pieces. I said, I'm not that Jewish. She said, you are. Just create from the heart. Just go back. Go back to your roots and blah, blah, blah. So I started writing all these stories, and they became extremely popular. I think because unlike a lot of the other actors and actresses who are wonderful, but I had a lot of experience performing comedy, so I was able to always add a lot of laughs to my stories as well as a lot of heart. Anyway, long story short, one of the patrons of Jewish Women's Theater said, "I love your stories so much, I want to commission you to write a play." And that's how it really started. I was so lucky. I mean, you know, I always had this idea in me to write a long piece, really getting these ideas out. But, you know, it felt overwhelming. How do I do it? How do I support myself while I'm writing it? What do I have to do? Do I have to rent a theater? Blah, blah, blah. So I was really lucky because the Jewish Women's Theater took me in. I wrote it, took me a year to write it, and then I performed it there. It was supposed to run for 5 weeks, and it ended up running for 16 months because it just sold out. It just kept selling out. And then Michael Alden, this wonderful producer here in New York, saw it, loved it, said, "We're going to do this. We're going to do it off-Broadway," and here I am, you know. But
I was speaking with Monica Piper, and you're hearing her story, and I wanted you to hear it in a very particular way, the way she's laid it out. For those of you, by the way, who want to have the 90 minutes that include a roller coaster ride of great comedy, pathos, interest, voyeurism, everything you can think of, and some great pictures, too. Then you're going to want to go to the New World Stages in New York City. I suspect that this may become one of these menopause, the musicals, where it's all over the country. I don't think you can always be all over the country, but this would be the kind of show that people would want to see everywhere, and not just bi-coastal. But it is called Not That Jewish. Now, before we break, you have to understand something about this show. It's not about being Jewish, and it's not about not being Jewish. It's about Monica Piper. And therefore, Monica had to pick out parts of her life, just the way we talk about in our own life review. We talk about journaling. Here is journaling and life review on steroids. Here is somebody who's a great artist who can bring her memoir to the stage. We talk about it as we age, that we want to do memoirs and life review. But here's a beautiful example of how it could really shine as art. And maybe it can happen to you in your own small communities, too, or even in your own family. So that journey that she's taken, part of it is, what is she willing to reveal to you on stage? Look, it gets dark. There's only one woman on a stage with some pictures on the background. That's it. So this is a brave performance. And Monica, we have about a minute, and then we'll have plenty of time together after the break. How did you pick... Let's take your mom's Alzheimer's. You revealed that to us. Why that, and perhaps not something else in the family? Was it having to do with how well easy it is to write?
I do reveal. Well, early on, I really let you see how funny my parents were. I become my father. I become my mother. Very different senses of humor, and you see the relationship between myself and my mother through various moments that are very funny, but she was always very supportive. So to see that I'm losing that by her no longer really being present when I was so used to a sarcastic remark or something funny is... It shows you the pain it caused me, but it also showed you the enormous love my father had for her in the way that
he
never left her side.
The
way
he
took care of her.
He was a caregiver. This seemed to really be a caregiver show. We'll come back. We'll talk about some of the more hysterical moments, funny moments, surprising moments of life as we go
for
through the memoir with Monica.
Da, 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 da.
Okay, so we're off. We're going to go back on. What you don't know is that our first part of the show, do you know a very famous entrepreneur, B. Smith? Did you ever buy a B. Smith? She catalogs.
No, but I know the name. How do I know the name?
Well, if you've ever been to a hotel, a lot of the big hotels, their gift shops are the B. Smith gift shops.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, that's
there's
how I know
restaurant.
The name.
There's B. Smith at
yeah.
a restaurant. Well, anyway, she got Alzheimer's, and this was her. She has a famous husband, and he was on the first part of the show. And I had no intention of Alzheimer's being an issue in the show, but, you know, it's so prevalent, and this is a show about aging in one way or another. So that connection really made the show, this particular show, like a module. And I know that because people are very interested in hearing a bit about that. It'll go everywhere. Including probably on some foundations, we'll put it on their website. So this is interesting that came up. The other is we do talk about life review as we age. And what you did, as I said, is like a life review on steroids. But in our next segment, I really just want to focus on you, you know, and the show. I just wanted to tell you that this really fits in more than you think. Our whole mission is successful aging. Let's put it that way. I'm going to turn 69 in September, and I know from what I'm talking about. Let's put it that way.
My birthday's tomorrow.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And it's that number, that number. But we don't talk about.
My mother
I can't
used to say,
you know,
going into the big numbers. My mom would say, going into the big numbers. Yeah, I know. But going back to the show, I do want to talk about how the New York crowd, New York crowd's a whole different crowd. And so I do want to ask about that. I do want to ask what's next. And I do want to ask where they can read more of your stories. Okay, so that's what we're going to do.
I'm sorry, and what's the last thing?
Where they can read your stories. Are your stories themselves published?
They're not really published. Jewish Women's Theater is putting together an anthology of CDs from their Salon series. You know what? They're not published at the moment.
Should I ask about the Salon series? Or is it too soon?
The Salon series is fabulous if they're in Los Angeles. I want to make sure that we talk about the universal themes in the show that, and make sure they understand again that you don't have to be Jewish at all. That people go thinking they're seeing a Jewish show, and yes, of course, it's about, you know, it's basically about growing up not very as not observant Jews, as secular Jews, and then adopting a child as a single mother.
Right.
And
I think it's about that more than anything.
It's also about my feeling that, like, I have to raise a Jewish man. And then at the end, you know, when he tells me he's not Jewish, I think it's a crisis until the birth mother, who starts talking with him, tells me I've raised this beautiful man. And then I realize he's got all the qualities that my grandma said it's important if you have a Jewish heart. And that's those words that flash across the screen. Deeds, acceptance, humor, compassion. So it all really ties in neatly. There's a real arc. There's a real journey.
Good. So you're going to hear the way I'll put that, and that's going to give you the open opportunity to say all of that, okay?
Great.
And FYI, on the side, my daughter lives in L.A. She graduated from Tisch. So, you know, I am in the theater, and I am your waiter. But she was able to become a casting director with Telsey Casting, and that's what she does.
Oh, wow.
And
that's great.
So I'm
tell
her
when I get
the
home
theater.
I need a part.
Yeah, I'm going to tell them all about
when I
the
get
theater,
home, I should be the funny little neighbor or something.
Yeah, I know. Guess what she casted? This Is Us. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
that is such a good show.
And she's 25, and... Yeah, but she wants to leave to get a master's in directing. So what can I say? To me, that's actually too Jewish. But all right. But okay, so we'll see what happens. And she does. She's written a lot of plays, and they're all Jewish plays. The last one is The Gold.
Oh, my God, she's got to. We have to connect her with Rhonda at Jewish Women's Theater. She's got to submit her plays, and they'll, if they like them, they'll put it up there. It's a small performance space in Santa Monica. It seats about 90. You know, it's not a huge theater, but it's getting really recognized because of my show, and Richard Pryor's daughter's show is opening this weekend at the Braid. It's called The Braid, and they specialize in Jewish plays.
Well, I will definitely let her know because it's very exciting. I also have a partner who is in Santa Monica, a business partner, that's where he lives, and I think he'll be an attendee. Because he goes, he loves that stuff. Let him know, because he pays for the tickets, so that's always good.
Oh, that's great. Tell him it's just go on jewishwomenstheater.org, and you'll find out everything.
I will do that. That's terrific. And I know you're not a New Yorker anymore, but
well, I am. I've been here. I grew up here, and I've been here since September, so it didn't take me long to get right back into it.
So there's a production in Washington Square Park called Shakespeare in the Square. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but that's my daughter created that when she was 18.
Oh, wow.
She and one other young man own that whole company.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, Tish does it as a student production, and they do the professional productions. So she's a real mover and shaker at 25. So we'll
she
see what
really
happens.
Is. That's amazing.
But it's all vagina jokes. It's all vagina jokes. I mean, it's a whole other world. So yeah. But I'll clue her in. Now we'll go back, and as you can see, I'm going to ask you a real generic question that's going to let you talk about the themes. All right?
Okay.
And that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So we are ready. Otherwise, we'll yent until the cows come home. Yeah. Okay, very good. I will do that. Okay. We're good. Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And I can't think of anything that is more apropos about truth as we age than to write a memoir. But what happens when you're Monica Piper and you are one of the leading producer of Rugrats, so funny, so wonderful, Roseanne, and you've written for Roseanne, Mad About You, have been a stand-up comic for many years, and then you decide it's time for a memoir. Well, we heard about the journey of how exactly this got produced and put on stage. The name of the show is Not That Jewish. It is actually neither about being Jewish or not being Jewish. You'll hear a little bit more about the themes that run through this. But for those of you who are interested, you've got to see it. 90 minutes of a lot of fun, but also a lot of thought-provoking information from this wonderful entertainer. And that's over at the New World Stage, New York City on West 50th Street. It may also be coming near you, because I'm going to eventually ask Monica what's next for her. But for now, You have to set the stage, so to speak. This is a roller coaster ride of a one-woman
yeah.
life with a lot of things going on, including single motherhood, including raising a boy by herself, and really questioning what does it mean to be Jewish? What does it mean to be human, even more than that? What's the implant? So take us through that journey a little bit, so and the big themes that we actually live through as you speak to us.
Oh, okay. Here we go. It opens. I'm in. It's a very quick scene where I'm in temple and it's Rosh Hashanah and I go, it's Rosh Hashanah, so I'm here. You know, it's like I'm not sure why. It's because I'm supposed to be. But the truth is, as the song plays, this beautiful Hebrew hymn, I have no idea what she's saying. So I explain that as a child, we weren't very observant, but we didn't belong to a temple. But on the high holy days, my mother would make us dress up and stand in front of the apartment building so it looked like we just got home from temple. And it was working until one of my little friends, I was seven, and another one of my seven-year-old neighbors said, "Did you really go to temple?" And I have to explain to her that, well, not exactly. And she says I'm not really Jewish. And I know,
you know,
I am Jewish. I go, yes, I am, because she goes, how, if you don't go to temple on the high holidays? I said, well, because my mommy and daddy and aunts and uncles and grandmas and grandpas are Jewish. She goes, okay, but you're not that Jewish. So
right.
That's kind of how it starts, that I'm told I'm not that.
Yeah, I just want to say here that one of the things about the show, at that part of the show, is it brings everybody back to their own childhood. And it doesn't matter if they're Jewish or not Jewish. They're thinking about, what were the impact of the things around me in my home that I take with me, that I sometimes take for granted or don't even realize. But it gets so implanted like a seed that, and roots, the way we would say roots, really do grow in you. And you can't
they
shake
do.
Them.
They
and
do. And
we
this
go
was
back
all in the Bronx. You know, I grew up in the Bronx, so... So there's a lot of that feeling too, and I ask my father, what does this mean, not that Jewish? And he has a very funny response. And then I ask my grandma, she says I'm not that Jewish, you know. And the what, not that Jewish? What kind of a cockamamie mishugana friend is that? And but my grandma says, listen, whether you go to temple or not, what's important is that you got a Jewish heart. So, interestingly enough, as the show progresses, and I can't state this enough, you don't have to be Jewish to get this show, to love this show. As the story progresses, you realize it's really about finding what she meant by a Jewish heart. And you know, it explores the love of family. It explores acts of compassion, acts of acceptance, the fact that you gotta face everything with humor. You know, my father taught me that. He said, laughter, making people laugh is a gift. It helps them get through their troubles. And I
will say that you really don't have, most of the people, you know, it's New York. New York is a very heavy Jewish population to begin with, and in the theater, as spectators, it gets even more focused. This wasn't such a Jewish crowd. I will tell you that.
No.
You'll be probably happy to hear that, Monica, when I went.
No, I am very happy. We are so happy about that. So many people come up and say, I'm not Jewish, but I think I have a Jewish heart. Or, you know, I was so surprised how much I loved this. I thought it was going to be all about being Jewish, and it's not. It's just about being human. I mean, how many of us, you know, after I have my son, and then that's kind of the second half of the whole show about raising my son and trying to find a man, because I choose to raise him as a single mother. I mean, I choose to adopt him as a single mother because all throughout the show, I talk about how much I yearn to have a family, other than the family I grew up in, but a family of my own. And a marriage fails, and another relationship fails. But you have to understand that as I'm talking about these failed relationships, it's funny. I promise.
You know, if they're saying this,
this doesn't sound funny. It's about divorce and death, and let's throw in cancer, and adoption, and but it is funny because the overall message is, you got to find the funny in not only the obviously funny things in life, but the hard times, the dark stuff. That's what I call it in the show. You know, you got to find the funny in the dark stuff. And
when you guys see it, because I don't want to miss saying this, when you guys see it, you simply have to go to any ticket site on the web, New World Stages. And when I say get out there, kids, make it happen. Get out there. Enjoy something. Dribbling. Thank you.
I can't Okay.
Okay, that was perfect. The last two words that you said, I can't, you're probably going to say you couldn't hear or something like that?
Yes, I couldn't hear. I'm so sorry that music came on. But I would love to wrap it up and say goodbye and please come see it. And is there anything I can...
Yeah, we can do that right now. So, Stuart, can I see you for a sec? We're just going to... You didn't disconnect at all, right? We're just going to... Oh, just 3 seconds. I'll tell you exactly how. So, what we're going to do now is I'm going to actually say to you, Monica, let's wrap it up. Tell everybody, give us the big invitation, and then you'll say what you want, okay?
Okay.
But we do have a time constraint, so let's say only about 4 or 5 seconds.
Sure.
Okay. Right.
So you need to give me a point where I can break so that I can break in and set a more chance. So you can see something enough that you can use it for stuff like, but I don't know how much you want to say before I do it.
Okay. Seconds, half a minute.
So I'm going to put a 30-second
timer. Good. So this is what he's doing.
And at 15, I'm starting.
Great. Okay, Monica. So that you get to say goodbye and all that. I'm going to. He's putting half a minute. Right. So I'm going to say thank you so much. I know you want to give a special invitation. You give your invitation, and the music is going to start. When the music starts. You'll have, then you'll be quiet. If you have a word or two, they will be able to hear it over the music, even though you may not be able to hear yourself, okay?
Okay.
So don't, but wrap it up so that I can thank them because it's the end of the show and I have to give my tagline, okay?
Got it.
So from the time that I say, I know you have a special invitation, you'll have about 28 seconds to give that invitation, which is a lot of time, actually. You know that.
Great.
You know time. Okay. So, Stuart, we are ready. 30 seconds, and then the music starts. just resetting the clock to put in a full 45 seconds. It'll be 30 seconds with you and 15 for the music.
Okay.
So, but I didn't, and I will not have a chance to ask you, so I'll ask you off the air. What is next? What are you doing now?
Well, we are, I know that they're putting together some tour dates, but it's hard because we got extended. We're here through April, but we may get extended again. So we don't know if we're
going
to stay here. I'm sorry. What?
I said, what a pity. You keep getting extended and you can't go on tour.
I know, but listen, I miss my kid, my house, my dog, my life in L.A. I'm not saying I don't want to be here. I do. But I would like to just touch down there for a couple of weeks and then come back, you know. But I don't know. I don't think that's possible.
See, well,
I don't think they're going to.
Seriously, the price of success. You got to. That, you can't
oh, hey,
that.
I'm not complaining. Are you kidding? I'm loving every minute of this.
Sure.
You know?
You went big time when you got off the road. I mean, you knew the price of success.
Oh, yeah, but for this to happen to me now at my age,
no,
when so many people, writers my age and performers are struggling, I'm blessed.
Yeah, it's true. No, it really is true. By the way, since I'll probably hang up as soon as we are finished, let me just get a pen. I want to get an email address so that when this goes on our website, I know exactly where to send it to. Can you just give me the address?
Yes. Send it to me at mpiper7@gmail.com.
Great.
And you can also send it to Scott Klein, who's the PR guy. It's Scott at ksa-pr.com.
Great.
That's Keith Sherman and Associates. Okay?
And it's Jewish Women's Theater?
Oh, that's Jewish Women's Theater.
Women.
No apostrophe in there for the website. JewishWomen'sTheater.org.
And
they
the
are
person,
oh, the person is Rhonda Spinak, S as in Sam, P-I-N-A-K. She's the artistic director. She's a dear friend, and she would be more than happy to. What's your daughter's name?
Actually, it's a different name than mine. It's Rose Bochner. Rose
okay.
Bochner.
Oh, Bochner, B-O-T-T.
B-O-C-H-N-E-R.
Oh, Bochner. Okay. Because I have a friend, Barbara Bochner. Okay.
Okay. So we are ready to go?
Yes.
So we are ready, then we'll be quiet. Silence for 10 seconds.
Okay.
That's a joke by itself. So.
Okay.
Okay. I start talking. Got it. Okay, so I'm going to start talking. I'll be maybe a second. That gives you 29, 28 seconds, and then you'll get the music. That's when you'll stop, okay?
Yep.
All right, so we're already a team. Go ahead. This is a conversation that could go on forever. I love it. But there's a special invitation for all of you from Monica, directly to you guys. Monica, give us your invitation.
My invitation is, please, come see this show because you will laugh. You know, it's a cliche. You'll laugh, you'll cry, but it's true. you will laugh and then you'll cry. And believe me, it's 90 lightning fast minutes of funny, moving, intimate, and inspirational theater.
And get out there, kids, and do make it happen. as I said, all that you said, even with the music coming, you may not have been able to hear it, but they can hear it very clearly. Okay?
Yes.
Good. So then that's going to be put on, that'll be the end of the show, and it'll
but
end
I forgot
very, very
to
well.
Say New World Stage. I forgot
yeah,
to
but
say.
I know,
but you did.
Okay. Yeah, I said it a number of times, and also,
right.
Of course, it's on the website.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah, so what happens is, so now I'll tell you, and I'll send it to you and Scott. On Wednesday, you are on the homepage of the website.
Uh-huh.
And
oh,
the website will have any logos, like the lobster that Scott sends me, and anything else he wants to send. And then it's archived. The entire show is archived. So
okay.
That people can hear it on, you know, in real time when they put on the show, but they can also hear it on an app from anywhere, or they can just listen to it if they know it's there. So if you like
oh, that's
the
great.
If you like the interview, you can just tell people about it on your Facebook page or any, you know.
Oh, that's great.
And they can hear it whenever they want to hear it. And
that's great.
The,
so
and,
as long as you send me all those links, I mean,
right.
Anything that, just give me the information so I can
right.
Absorb it, look at it, figure out what to lift and how to, and then put it on Facebook or, you know, we have a, tell Scott, to also to we have advertising people who there's a not that Jewish Facebook page as well.
Sure,
we'll put it on there.
And you know wherever it belongs to you now. All right, so anything
yes,
you want to do
great.
With it, do with it, and it's perfect. And it's delightful. It is
great.
A great show. I think I'll tell you. I have a great talent. I have an incredible talent. I am the world's best spectator.
That's great.
I love everything, and I see everything. My daughter says I'll go to the opening of an envelope. But the fact is that this is a standout. Believe me, it was a standout. In that same week, I saw Cate Blanchett, and this, and I can tell you the lines from your show. It was really wonderful. So I thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Okay.
Thank you. What a wonderful interview. You're a terrific interviewer. Really.
Thank you.
You know,
I really enjoyed.
Okay. I loved it. Thank you. And tell your daughter to send her plays to Rhonda.
I will, because her original love was to play, to be a playwright, and she was in all these festivals. And then,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she was great. And then there was something called Head Bitch in Charge, which is a website for young women that are leading in areas that men usually lead.
Uh-huh.
And she was the head bitch in charge when she was 22, a very young website as a director. And then she got caught up in theater management, and she started to
mm-hmm.
be the assistant to the new Theater for a New Audience in Brooklyn across from BAM, and decided to go to L.A. Honestly, she slept on her brother's couch in L.A. for 8 months
uh-huh.
With no job. Until she
well,
got hired casting, and casting took off. But that's not her first love. But it pays the bills.
Yeah.
So that's what
well,
she is. So I think she would love to be able to see if people still think her writing is good. We shall see.
Oh, my God. Well, Rhonda is always looking for... And I'll tell you something else. They are very much looking for younger writers. They're looking for millennials to, they really want to attract a younger audience to Jewish women's theater, which they have been doing. You know, just like my show, four generations one night came to my show. There was a teenage girl, her mother, her grandmother and her great-grandmother, and they all sat there laughing together, and that was thrilling. But Rhonda's looking for young writers.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, for you personally, I know the age group. That's the waters in which I swim. There is so much juice in getting recognized. Again, no matter how successful you were up until this time, and I know people have made millions up until a certain age, and they still feel marginalized. And
yes.
when something happens in their business where they get recognized again, my God, it changes the
next
30 years.
Oh, my God, you have no idea. Because the truth is, there is so much ageism in in the sitcom world. There's no way I'd want to write on a sitcom. You know, my last sitcom was a show called Veronica's Closet with Kirstie Alley. And it wasn't a great show. It lasted for three seasons. And, but, oh, my God, I was the oldest person in that room by at least 15 years. And I wasn't even old then. You know what I mean?
Well, for a long time, I mean, maybe if you ever have a chance, I don't want to presume too much. I'm always in the city. I'd love to have lunch. But for many years, I was a member of the Friars Club because
uh-huh.
we have a very large New York audience for the radio. And then I had a TV show also, but it was a financial TV show. It wasn't anything comic.
Uh-huh.
So I do understand those issues. So when I did this show, I have something called the Ageism Police, where we
uh-huh.
blow the whistle on ageist characters in comedy. I blew the whistle on Cinderella. Cinderella, the movie that came out, which wasn't great because my son works for Disney. But the fact
uh-huh.
it was that everybody got to try on the shoe. This is true. This is
yeah.
the cartoon. The big cartoon, Disney. Everybody got to try on the shoe except the fat girl and the old lady. And it was made
wow.
a point of that they laughed at them when they went to try on the shoe.
Oh, my
now,
God.
I went bananas. Now, everybody's looking at the prince and this and that. And I'm looking at that. So you can see I
oh.
can lead a very sour life. But
okay. I would love to have lunch with you.
I went bananas.
Well, can you give me your number or when you
oh,
give
sure.
me your email? Okay.
I will give you my contact information when I send to
yeah,
M.
Send
Piper.
Send me an email at
mpiper7.
Don't forget
right.
the 7. It's Mickey
right.
Mantle's number. It's mpiper7.
Yeah, well, I know.
At Gmail.
My husband, by the way, saw the show, too. And he is uh-huh. he believes that baseball is a metaphor for life. So...
Uh-huh.
You ask him, what is the show about? He'll tell you it's about Mickey Mantle. Your relationship with Mickey Mantle. So everybody
That's so
takes
funny.
Something different out of it. But, yeah, I would love that. And just to be interesting to tell you, next week I'm speaking in Vegas in something called Environments for Aging. You
uh-huh.
will be shocked to know what's going on in that world from chips that you'll be able to put in your arm so if you fall down, people will find you and you don't have to wear the stupid pendant.
Oh,
my
God.
To oh. spirituality, creativity, sexuality. I mean, it's a whole
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, one night is during the show, I'm doing the show and I hear this voice that is obviously a digital voice that says, help is on its way. Help is on its way. And I hear it kind of I don't know, do I stop the show? Do I? What happens? And people just kept going, shh, shh, you know, to the person. And what happened was, I learned later, her life alert button went off. And she didn't know how to shut it off. And so, the paramedics show up at the stage door. All this stuff is going on. But anyway, I wrote on Facebook, I said, I don't know how it went off accidentally. Either she was clutching her heart with emotion or she was whispering, help me, I've fallen into a bad show and can't get out.
My mom would wear it because every time she forgot about it, they would call. And that was the alert service. So my mom
oh.
was very Jewish, said, the alert service should drop dead. that was that. All right, we're going to have a ball. And if you do have time.
All right. Email me.
Always,
I'd love to have lunch
thanks.
With you. this sounds like a match made in heaven, and we'll talk soon. And thank you.
Okay,
that was a lovely interview. I really appreciate it.
Take care.
All right.
Thank you.
You too.
Did you hang up? Hang on one second.